welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
Every week we review a new streaming show or movie and recap the latest streaming news. This week I thought we would start with something that Netflix launched that we may have talked a little bit about when it was in testing, but now is available, I believe, to all of us. It's called Play Something. And so it's a button in Netflix where it's just, you're basically saying, I don't want to have to decide, just start playing something for me. Have you guys seen this?
Yes. Well, I mean, I've seen that it exists. I actually haven't seen it in Netflix yet, but I don't think I've opened Netflix since it launched.
Oh, well, I saw the button last night when I was doing my homework for the podcast. But it is supposed to be based on, you know, the next episode of a TV show that you've been binging, or you're only halfway through a movie, you would just start playing that. So it's not like totally wild recommendations.
My list is full of stuff that I abandoned, though, that I don't want to see again.
Yeah, just feeds through from the continue watching where you're like, no, I didn't want to continue.
Yeah. Also, a lot of those are like, Netflix, you got this wrong. I saw that already, and I don't understand why you think that I wanted to watch it again or whatever. But I also just fixed this article because it really bothered me. The inline image wasn't full width, so I changed that.
Thank you. Great. Thank you for the update. This just seems like a thing. Like, I don't know.
Would you use it?
Maybe to fall asleep. But I would only use it if, like, I could have, like, if it was my list, right? If it's continue watching, I think that's different because I wouldn't want to, like, continue watching something at random. But if it was, like, particularly if you could curate a special list, like a bedtime list. Right. It'd be nice if you could have, like, subcategories, right? And then you could just, like, do play something and then choose from that list. Because right now my existing list is very scattered. It's, like, a lot of documentaries, some scary stuff, some funny stuff. Some random movies that I don't know if I'll like or not. Like, that's not a good option.
Yeah, I want I want different curated lists of that you can make as opposed to just my list. That's a great idea. That would
more
be a
like
good
a playlist.
Feature.
Thank you. I'm here. Yeah. I like to think of myself as the shit, as in I just fertilize.
Oh, yeah. That's how I think of you, too.
Thank you. Manure.
No comment.
Smart.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the thing that is I like about it is that it's attempting to solve that feeling of where you're just sitting there in front of Netflix being like, what am I going to watch? And so you might not like the first thing that comes up, but instead of going through all these tiles and being like, I don't know. You just are like, okay, give me something. All right, not this. Next one. Okay, not this. Next one. Okay, I like
this. Oh, wait,
this.
You can quickly say next?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. Okay, that helps. I just feel like this is a thing where there's, because they tested it, right? They beta tested it. So it's not like they were like, let's just try this and then for everybody. So apparently people were like, oh, yeah, we really like this. But my theory is that they tried it out and like the vast majority of people are like, I don't want anything to do with this.
And they counted and like, that as a win at Netflix.
Well, and then a few people were like, I really love this. This is everything I want. And they were like, that's a win. Because those few hardcore people loved it. This is a straw poll based on just me asking people about it. But I think most people hate the idea of it and would never want to consume content that way. And then a small portion of people are like, this solves every problem I've ever had.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. One is it's very Netflix to consider people clicking on something once and then never using it again as a as a plus, right? Like whatever their little metric is for someone watched two minutes of something, so we count that as a view or whatever. My second thought is that this feels like a very lazy feature to solve what is actually a problem for Netflix over the long term, right? Which is that, like, there's so much on there that it's really hard to organize it. It's really hard that people are, like, paralyzed by choice, right? Like, any software designer or engineer would tell you, like, you can't give people 1,000 options. You can give them 3, right? And they feel like they have control, but they're not overwhelmed. And Netflix has that problem in front of them They have so much resources. They have so much data. You would think that they could come up with, and yeah, like maybe it would be like more friction, but I would love to like rate things, right? Like there's, you can say like binary yes, no, but I would love to like rate things, and I would love for them to know, they know I like documentaries about murderers, but do they have any idea of how I rank those? And like how good really are their algorithms in saying like, this is similar to that, right? And so it just feels like this is a more lazy response. I also don't understand why like Rotten Tomatoes and other ranking systems aren't built into Netflix.
Because they're owned by different companies, I guess. So they haven't decided to integrate it.
But just like shake hands and shit. Come on. Like think of the user.
Remember though, didn't they used to do scored ratings from users? And then they changed it to the simpler rating system? Am I making that up?
There was percentages, but it was a percentage that was how likely we think you are to like it.
It's they still have that. It's like they call it like, it's like 88% match. And I'm like, matched on what though? A match to what? Like, because my viewing history, like, especially given the way Netflix counts it, what do you guys fucking know? Anyway.
Yeah, step up Netflix.
I'm feeling spicy.
They think that this is kind of okay, but my new account, because I think I mentioned on the podcast before, but I had to like basically restart my account because they were charging me in American dollars instead of Canadian dollars. So I started from scratch pretty recently, and then my new one is like all over the place because it's only seen what I've seen since then, right? So it has a really skewed idea of my preferences. And the one thing it thinks I really love is anime. So basically every row is anime now, which is kind of fair because I like me some anime, but not that much of it. And it's definitely broken though. Like the whole thing is broken. And also it's just as their library grows, those rows just get so much more ridiculous. It's like, what do these rows even do? It's just the same blocks rearranged to me in different orders. Like, they need to rethink it. They need to rethink it from the ground up.
Yeah, let's start over.
Yes, yeah.
We'll start with mailing DVDs to people. And from there, we'll figure it out, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Daryl.
Let's call it, what was it called? Quickster. The spin out? Quickster, yeah. Let's call it Quickster.
I don't know how I know that. It's so amazing. You had it right to mind. Yeah, it's just, boom, Quickster, know it, got it, it's in there.
All right, we solved their problem.
One problem down, bring on the next. And honestly, Stowaway is a problem, but.
Yeah. Ooh, all right, well, should we get to it? We're probably not going to solve all of Netflix's product problems today.
No, I'm gonna try out this shuffle play thing, though. I'm curious about it now, but I feel like I'm instantly going to hate it. That's my assumption.
Way to come in open-minded.
One other thing I wanted to mention, because I doubt we're going to do a full review at any point, is I think we've mentioned that the Mortal Kombat remake is now on HBO Max, and I have watched it.
And I've watched it too.
We're not doing a review, so you guys enjoy. You have 5 minutes.
It's real dumb, but I had a good time.
Yep, can't sum it up in 5 minutes. It's just so good. Everyone should watch it for sure. And I am so excited about the Mortal Kombat verse to come out of it. Like, genuinely. I'm just like, wow. I can't wait to explore all the lore.
One of the craziest things about the movie is that, so Mortal Kombat, the game, and the first movie is called Mortal Kombat because there's a tournament, the Mortal Kombat tournament. This new movie does not have a tournament in it. It's all set up for a sequel.
That's right. Tournament doesn't even happen. No, it's because I guess it's a spoiler. But if you're, there's nothing to spoil. You can't be, just go and be like, you know what you're gonna get. And that is the most surprising part of the thing, though. So we did kind of spoil it there, but it's fine. It's not like they don't fight. They fight. Like, go enjoy.
And that's our 5 minutes. I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Anthony.
Jordan, you love this movie. I think you would like this movie more than you think that you would.
Okay.
You just have to have a high tolerance for violence.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. You do have to have... You have to... Yeah. Ultraviolence is definitely like a prerequisite. A tolerance for ultraviolence.
I do like the song Ultraviolence by Lana Del Rey.
That's what it's based on.
Do you like the song Mortal Kombat by The Immortals?
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a dumb movie and has lots of dumb things in it, but I really enjoyed it and recommend it for anyone who's curious about it.
Yeah. It has a lot of really, really like mind-boggling choices that if you do think about them for too long, you're like, well, okay, I ruined it. So I recommend not doing that.
And by too long, you mean 10 seconds.
At all. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's do our actual review, which is of Stowaway, a movie on Netflix with kind of an amazing cast. It has Anna Kendrick, Daniel Day Kim, Toni Collette, and someone I didn't know, Shamir Anderson. And that's basically the whole cast. Because
not basically. That is the whole cast.
That is the whole cast.
There's some voices on the radio.
No.
Don't ignore them.
They don't even play the voices.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, I think you're right. It's only on their side, right?
Almost everything is one-sided, which we will get into, but carry on.
So it is a film about a mission to Mars in which there are three crew members, but you discover fairly early on that there is a fourth person who had a bit of an accident and is stuck on their ship for the duration.
Makes it sound like he like peed his pants.
Which is even more than a bit of an accident as well, to be honest.
They don't go into a lot of details, and it seems kind of silly, which we can talk about. But so he's stuck on this ship, and I don't think it's spoiling things to say that it becomes clear that resources are going to be an issue because they planned on three people for this, you know, 2-year round trip journey, and now there are four, and you know pretty much immediately that moral dilemmas will ensue.
Which is the name of the game in this one. Moral dilemmas. Yeah. You could have called it that.
Yeah, they really could have. And they could have filmed it on any, like in any situation, really, and just made, I mean, like, man, I guess not. I guess the space requirement.
No, it had
is
to be in space,
but...
or the ocean, or a cave. Those are the three options.
I guess the point that I'm trying to make as we get into our high level thoughts is that I, as you guys know, am a big sci-fi fan. I'm also a big Anna Kendrick fan. I'm a huge Toni Collette fan as well. So this had the makings of everything that I would want, right? And I did not enjoy it really at all. I mean, not at all, but much less than I expected to based on the ingredients involved. And I think part of it was that it was so insular. So we never really get off the ship. There's no like Houston. There's no like family back home. There's no, it's just the four of them, which I get, like it's COVID and that's how they had, you know, shoot it and stuff like that. But I don't know, it just feels very obvious that it was based on COVID and not for the sake of the film in my mind. And two is that like, it really was like a drama. Like it was like an emotional drama. And so it didn't feel good. It didn't feel well done enough to be that, right? Like Gravity is a great example of an emotional drama that is set in space that lives up to that. And it's not my favorite space movie. It is like really intense and kind of slow and all of these things. But like it at least lives up to what it's supposed to be, right? And it has these amazing performances and all this stuff. Like, this should have been like a silly, fun sci-fi movie. Maybe not even silly, but like fun and action-packed. And I mean, you have people like Anna Kendrick, like you have the opportunity to infuse some humor into it. Maybe have like a happy ending, you know, like, and I just didn't feel like it knew what it was, I guess. I don't know. I was kind of bored, to be honest.
Yeah, I get the boredom part actually, and I think it is the closest comparison is Gravity in terms of the overall approach and like the attempt to like drive up the tension. I don't think it ratchets up the tension quite as effectively as that, or even other space movies, really, that I can think of. I forget the one. I don't know. We saw one recently. I think we watched it for this podcast. It might have been a television show where they were out.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Is it Katie Sackhoff?
Was it? But what was the one where they went out on the ship and they were messing around with the solar sails?
The one with Hilary Swank.
Oh yeah, Away.
Away. Yeah.
Terrible title.
Which I loved that though. That was good. That was good show, better than title. This. Like that show should have been redone, and they should have used the budget for this for that.
I don't think that was an option, but it's because Hero is an Amazon, right? In I think when you guys watched it in the U.S., it was a Netflix original.
Okay. Yeah.
It was on Amazon in Canada.
Right. So I should say that factually, this was actually shot pre-COVID.
Wow.
Oh,
that makes me even more mad.
I was going to say something because it didn't feel like they were doing it strictly for COVID. I think they were trying for something.
I think also probably that they, I don't think this was a super low budget movie, but I don't think it was a big budget movie either. So
they spent all the budget on the actors.
Yeah, exactly. They spent money on the actors and then some money on the CG at the end. But that was basically the money they had. And so it was originally going to be released, I think, in theaters by Sony, and then because of COVID they just sold it to Netflix and apparently to Amazon elsewhere.
Right.
I don't know. And like some of the things about the way it was shot too, like there are scenes where it feels like we should get an over the shoulder and see who's talking to whom, and they're doing like kind of a wide shot, and it almost just feels like, oh, we have this one set and it's kind of tight, and so instead of making a separate version of this set where we can shoot this in different ways, we're just gonna hang out here in the space where we have to put a camera. And
yeah, I didn't think it was very ambitious from the cinematography perspective, if that's what you're getting at. And I felt that like is. That was like a disservice to the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one aspect of that I did like was I got the sense that they really built a continuous space that the actors could walk around in, that there was like an internal ship. And it wasn't just like these separate rooms in a warehouse somewhere.
Yeah. The ship felt very built out, as opposed to a bunch of facades and like a soundstage or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they did do that. Good job. Kudos on that one. Also, kudos on everyone speaking with just like their accent that exists already and that they already have. Yep. I'm not trying to put on accents.
Although Toni Collette can do a good American accent.
Apparently. I mean, I'm trying to remember like what the last thing I saw Toni Collette in. I know she's a very popular actress who's been in many, many things, but I don't remember the last thing I saw her in.
I know the thing that that is most memorable to me is United States of Tara, which was a show that had 3 seasons. I don't remember on what. And she played a mother to 2 kids. Her husband was Aiden from Sex and the City. And she had a multiple personality disorder. I don't know if that's what it's called now.
I was having the same thought where I was like, they can't still be calling it that, can they?
I think it's called dissociative identity disorder.
Yeah,
now.
There we go. That sounds more correct. But she nailed it too. It was awesome.
Yeah, I've heard of that one. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, she's also great in Hereditary, as I think I've mentioned in
other episodes. Anthony loves Hereditary. Everybody knows.
But I think she is, of the actors, probably the one who's wasted in this movie because
I agree.
Her main job is just to look really concerned.
She does some really good emoting, though. Yeah. Well,
and they almost tried to cast her as the villain in a way, which I guess we can get into more with spoilers. Not like a true villain. Right? Because this is very much like a man versus nature story. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. It didn't feel right. Like, it didn't feel right for that character to be in that position necessarily.
But that's the thing. That's what you got to do. Tough choices.
Yeah, I know. But she was good about tough choices where, I don't know. She just...
Maybe we'll wait for spoilers, I guess.
Right. So I would say that I was skeptical about the movie partly because there's this classic science fiction short story called The Cold Equations, which is basically the same setup as this, where somebody's taking these like really important medical supplies on a spaceship it turns out that like this teenage girl intentionally has stowed away on board. And then, you know, because the trip has been calculated with one person on board, it creates these like this very challenging moral dilemma. But the thing is, that story, I mean, I think there's a lot of interesting criticism of that story in terms of like, really, would you design a mission this way? This seems like really right. risky. Like, there's no margin for error. But like, it works really well as a short story because it's like 15 pages long. So the question is, how do you stretch that concept that you can explain in like two sentences into a 2-hour film? And what I worried about is it basically just going to be people realizing fairly early on that they have to make this terrible choice, and then they're just going to be really stressed and sad about it for 2 hours. And it's not quite that. That there is a long stretch of the movie that is that, and I think that the cast handles that really well, and I think in general the cast is really good. But
yeah.
They add these other complications towards the end, which make it more interesting, even if in some ways I think the complications are not super convincing.
Yes.
I also think that, like, and maybe Daryl, you're the best person, but probably both of you, to be honest, are the best people to ask about this. But, like, you know, with a movie like The Martian, like, we knew ahead of time that, like, Mr. Google or whatever his name is had figured out, like, this is the actual science involved in what is and is not possible. And it all was, like, true, right? Like, it was all...
Mr. Google, is that the author of...
Yeah, didn't he formerly work at Google, and then he
Andy Weir.
Became an author?
Did Andy Weir used to work at Google?
I don't know.
Am I tripping?
That's news to me. I thought he was, like, I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know why I thought that.
I mean,
I could be right.
Sure. I pulled out Quickster. He was a computer programmer for much of his life. He used to work at AOL.
Oh, did he work at Google, though?
It doesn't look like it. AOL, damn. Palm, Mobile Iron, and Blizzard.
Well, still, close enough. I mean, I had the right general idea.
Maybe he not. Lived in Mountain View.
Oh, maybe that's where I got it.
It's weird that he didn't work at Google.
I know. What the hell?
Anyway, the point is that he did his research, and it was all true. And it felt like there are probably things about this that were, you know, mathed out or whatever, and figured out whether or not this was actually possible. But it felt like a huge suspension of belief. Like, I was skeptical of everything that happened because of the original concept.
Yes.
That before a spaceship that is on a 2-year critical mission to Mars takes off, that no one knows that there's a fourth body on board. That, to me, is such a suspension of belief that, like, everything that happens from that point on, every complication, every like scientific kind of thing that I'm supposed to be like, oh yeah, that's how this works. I was like, is it? Are you sure?
Right.
You know, like it took me out of, you either have to go way, way sci-fi where it's like all of these things you take for granted, like Star Wars style, where it's like, oh, there's a silly like bubble that keeps the space out from the port, even though it's wide open and ships are flying in and out. Or you have to Andy Weir it and be like, this is exactly right. And if a scientist or like a space person was watching this, they would be like, yeah, wow, that's correct.
Yeah, I think it was like, that is the biggest flaw for me for this one, was that they ask you to really accept a premise that's totally out there, like in terms of how you design and deploy these things. So you're right. It felt a bit hard science fiction-y. I mean, it felt quite hard science fiction. It's not like out there. It's not science fantasy or whatever, like the, right. like the Star Wars stuff that you're talking about. But then that, yeah, that's asking so much. It's asking so much of an audience that has even any kind of like knowledge at all of how like space flight works, right? Like, yeah, and then you can't trust it after that. You can't.
How much of that is the fact that? Because I know that in like as I mentioned in like the original short story that I think at least is an inspiration for this, the stowaway is willing. Which I mean, there's still plausibility issues. Why did they not know that there was an extra person on board? But I feel like this movie adds an even additional layer to that, where it's not even that he was trying to get on board the ship, but it was just this dumb accident. But even so, yeah. The dumb accident put him in this position where he was completely hidden from the crew for the entire takeoff, and no one else noticed that he was gone. And, you know, they do acknowledge at the very beginning with the takeoff that something is a little bit off with their right. weight, but that there's no, yeah, that doesn't seem to raise any serious red flags.
Yeah, that's the biggest, because if there was intention, like, then at least you could be like, well, okay, I mean, he was purposely obfuscating things and, like, trying to make it seem like it was not the thing. But to be, like, to ask us to believe, like, they put a whole very large human on a rocket and nobody paid attention to it. In Rocket Launch is a game of ounces. Like, it's literally like, oh, like this, we can't use this because this screw weighs too much. So we have to use this other screw that weighs slightly less. Like, it's not a thing where it's like, well, a whole human person there, I guess nobody notices it. Duh, what? Oops, accident. Like, that, it just would not ever possibly happen. So, big problem.
Yeah, and I feel like the other aspect as far as the plausibility for me that I was kind of alluding to is that I feel like it would be, and I understand why from a storytelling point of view they couldn't necessarily do this, but it would just be a lot simpler if you just said, hey, we planned for 3 people on this trip. There's a 4th person. That's not survivable. We can't have a 4th person. But instead they added all this other stuff of, okay, then when we found him, he also damaged this, like, crucial, right. like, unit. And so it just feels like you feel more and more the fact that this is a completely manufactured moral dilemma. But
that's a little more believable. Because after, like, if you are willing to accept, like, okay, well, he got on whatever, then the other thing that people always build into to space missions is redundancy, like redundancy of systems across every single thing. There's never like one thing that fails that cannot be replaced, essentially, right? So it's kind of like they broke it because they went too far the other way on the other side. They were like, okay, I guess they could just forget that this dummy is loaded up in the rafters wherever the fuck he was. And then they're also like, oh, but remember, like, everybody plans to the detail where, like, their systems would have redundancy, so he has to break those, too. It's like, what are you doing? Like, no, it's too much. It's too much, right?
Yeah. I mean, I should say, though, that despite the plausibility issues, I liked the movie a lot. And I think a lot of that comes down... I don't think it's, like, great. Certainly not as good as Gravity. But I thought that the performances were really good. I thought Anna Kendrick was really good. Daniel Day-Kim was really good. It's interesting because you don't get a lot about their background. It's a real focus on kind of like what roles they play on the ship and how they relate to each other and how they relate to this stowaway. But I think that they do a good job of, or at least they did a good job of convincing me that these are people who were really well trained, knew exactly what their jobs were, and all liked each other and got along and had been training together for a long time. And so all of that stuff I completely bought. And so when you introduce this new element that is, you know, forcing them to kind of make these difficult decisions, I bought the emotional aspect of that, even if I didn't buy the science aspect.
Yeah, for sure. I did too. And I think everybody did a really good job of selling the agony of that. And I think that was one of the parts where, like, Toni Collette was strongest, was in just displaying that in a real, like, visceral, basic way, where it was like, I am convinced that you really feel like you are having to choose between people's lives and the, you know, the gravity of that decision. So that I do think was good.
I didn't feel like it was very believable that they would react that way, like the way that they did. Like, I feel like your survival instinct would kick in more. I guess they've been like trained, and maybe they're just better people than me, but like, they've been trained to stay calm and problem solve before freaking out and like letting their fight or flight kick in. But
I think that was where this is better than something like, not to disparage the Katie Sackhoff show, which is excellent, but
fantastic, way better than this.
But if you had, like, based on my limited experience with real astronauts, like, this is the kind of dilemma they would encounter, as opposed to like immediately being like, all right, how do we conspire to kill this third person so that we can get along on our way or take over or whatever, right? So to me, that was not a weakness. It was more of a strength. But I think one thing that just came to me while we were talking about that is like, this felt a lot more like almost a dramatic exercise, like a setup, like as if you were in a drama class and people were like, all right, here's the premise, go. And then like they did a really good job, the three people of being in that like four person act play or whatever, one act play. And based on that premise that you don't have to worry about, that's just the premise that you need to use for your emotional trigger. And so it lacks any of the substance or depth of like a real story, but has all like a emotional character study, basically. That's what it felt like to me, like a four person emotional character study as opposed to like an actual movie.
And I mean, I think that fundamentally I'm fine with that. And I like the fact that it's driven by emotion and that it is more about the characters, and that it is an idea that I think you can sort of imagine. I think different writers would approach it differently, that especially recently we're more used to seeing sort of like the Lord of the Flies version of this scenario is like when things go wrong, everyone turns on everyone and, you know, you got to watch your back and who's going to betray who. And I think this is very different. And I think, you know, more aspirational.
I would do that other thing that you mentioned.
and I think you can make an argument that this makes more sense if you've been like training for this year and if you've been training for this your entire life and you've been chosen for somebody who has a lot of grace under pressure and all of that, that you get something closer to this rather than everyone immediately punching each other and betraying.
Yeah,
each other.
Would never choose. We would fail their screening process.
100%. They'd be like, what would you do if you had to choose between your life and another? And I'd be like, unplug his air. What do you mean? Easy peasy.
So you're saying there's a 25% chance we won't survive. Don't like those odds. Just going to make sure.
Next question, please. I think we should get into spoilers because I have thoughts on like the final sequence.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you have not seen Stowaway and you don't want to know how it ends, you should stop listening now.
Beep, beep, okay, beep. We gave you your chance. Bye.
So yeah, you wanted to talk about the ending, Jordan.
Yeah. And also, I don't know if we've ever said at any point pre-spoilers that it's an oxygen problem.
Right.
But that actually comes up in the trailer, so that wasn't a spoiler. And I wanted to say so, but I wasn't 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that it comes up in the trailer. Just to correct people for the fun of it right now. So yeah, the end... There's this whole thing where they try shit with algae, which they completely ruin the whole reason they're going to Mars by using the algae. So I get where Daniel Day-Kim is coming from. And then they realize, hey, we came up here with a, you know, big tank full of oxygen. It's just
over there, like
400 meters away or whatever.
Yeah, 450 meters, I believe. They use metric because it's a science movie, and all science is in metric. Americans, get with the program.
I'm all about the metric system. I totally wish we were on it. No offense taken over here. I also, this was one of those things too, Daryl, like because I had suspended my belief for this stupid, or not suspended, even though I was asked to, with the Stowaway. I was like, is that really how they would do gravity? Is by doing something... having a 450 meter tank.
Oh, to do the tethic thing or whatever?
Yeah, to do the centrifugal?
Centrifugal force. Yeah, I mean, well, you would need an oblong shape and it has to be like adequately long in order
and
to...
And would you really put solar panels in the midpoint? Like, feels I like mean, if no the idea. Solar panels go down, if there's some sort of injury to them in any way, like from space debris or whatever... You really want to be going 225 meters away to go fix them? Like, come on, people. Like, right. I mean, it just seems like maybe I'm the stupid one here. It's totally possible. It's frequent. But, like, you know, that seemed off. But let's just say all of that is true. They have to go climb slash float slash climb to this other tank to go retrieve oxygen that they could or could not be there.
And they do it, and then they come back, and then there's a solar storm, so they have to rush back, whatever. Like, that as the climactic space moment was such a letdown for me. Like, it didn't feel, like, exciting enough for some reason. And I was also like, what was up with the whole it being so far away thing? And how is it possible that no one has a, like, a read on how much oxygen is in that tank? Like, NASA or whoever, Hyperion, it sucks big time. Yeah. Like, they don't know that there's another passenger on the thing. They don't know what's left in the tanks. Like, get it together, folks. Like, you should have a way to read that without going all the way down there. And I don't know. It was just kind of, like, boring. Remember in a way when they had to do their EVA and there was like all of that hoopla made about like the strength it takes to hold on and to climb and to and like the energy and like the deep breathing inside the mask that they were, it was like very visceral experience, the idea of being on an EVA like that, and it heightened the tension so much and made it so amazing to watch and be a part of. And this was just like, we're climbing, and like at one point he's like, I'm tired, she's like, okay, we'll take a break, you know. And then like,
yeah, they tried to, I think they tried to convey that a bit with like the guy trying to like the stowaway guy trying to get accustomed to it and be like, oh, I can't do it. But
that more looked like him as a like 100% failure doing anything athletic than it looked like what they were doing was super difficult to me.
I mean, my experience of watching it was that I was incredibly tense the whole time, but not because it's necessarily staged in a, like, if I look back on it, I'm definitely like, oh yeah, it's, they're literally just climbing up and down a rope for like 15 minutes.
Right.
And it was because I was convinced that Daniel Day Kim was going to die. And I was like, oh no, oh no.
Yeah, I thought he was too.
I didn't think he was going to die.
I didn't find that. I have to agree with Jordan that I like the tension was lost to me in that one, except for like maybe a couple moments. But it did not feel, it felt like it was trying to be really, really tense, and it was like didn't achieve that for me, even when they were like racing back from the solar storm the first time. And there was the part where they were going forward and they were like, you can't touch the solar rays or else we'll have no power. And then it was like,
okay. And you'll die. Like, okay, they're full of electricity or whatever. And
right.
And then they just, like, float by them on the way back. They're just like, well, we gotta hurry, so fuck that. Like, let's just, you know. And also when she, like, starts going really fast, because, like, at the center by the solar panels, for those of you who are listening but unspoiled, like, there's no gravity. So they start the climb, and it's really hard, and then it gets easier and easier and easier, and then they kind of float down, and then they have to make sure they're latched in because gravity's kicking in, and they have to go down, whatever. And like, there's a point where Anna Kendrick is going too fast, and she can't lock in because she's holding onto an oxygen tank.
Yeah.
Why wasn't there more thought put into that? Like, she's just racing ahead of Daniel Day Kim, who's like, whatever, bye.
Although, like, this is a moment of panic where they're, like, worried about,
I know,
about,
but they're trained
the
not
storm.
To.
But, and they thought they were going to, because, like, the whole reason that failure point exists is because they were like, well, there's not two of us there, like, carrying it between us with this rope array, which would have prevented that from happening. And Daniel Day Kim is kind of like, oh, go ahead. And then after she falls super fast to the thing and loses the oxygen tank, he's like, oh, here I am. Oh, what happened? Oh, shit. Maybe I should have came with you. Like, it's,
and also maybe she should have like waited. Like, she had no gravity where she was. Just chill for a sec. Damn. Like, but she started going down and she lost control, and then they lose the oxygen tank, and all of that is supposed to have you sweating for, you know, 30 minutes, and then they lose the oxygen tank and you're supposed to be like, fuck. And like, I just didn't have any of that. Like, I was texting. Because it was just like, okay, when are they going to be done climbing? If this is the whole movie, is just this fucking stupid climbing thing, like, I can look
away.
Yeah,
it felt like it drew out a bit there. And then, because again, I just felt like they were looking for this tension. And I think they just felt like they needed this climactic moment, when really it was like, I'm more concerned about who's making the decisions rather than, like, how do you get to those decisions? Or you could have got there faster and it would have had the same impact to me. I don't know. But I mean, I, at that whole point, I pretty much knew what was going to happen. I wasn't also surprised about it, right? I was like, oh, okay, they have a means. You set up a means for them to get the oxygen for everyone to survive. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, what'll probably end up happening is, like, you find a way to save, like, three of them, like, the original capacity again, but somebody has to, like, actively sacrifice themselves, right? Which is actually how it went, so...
I would say that that scene worked for me in a way that it seems like it didn't work for you, but that it was more like if I stepped back and thought about it, it was seemed very silly because in order for this to happen, it's not just that this guy has to get on board but and not be found, but that he has to specifically be in this, like, I guess, explosive bolt accident right where the air scrubber is. Yeah. And damage that, and then... the algae that
and Daniel break can, Toni Collette's arm so that she can't be the one to sacrifice, right? Since she's the natural choice as the commander, right, of the mission. Yeah.
Yeah, and then like the algae has to break down. Although that part's pretty believable because they emphasize the idea that it's not really meant for the ship. And then there has to be a solar storm, which we have not seen for the rest of the movie. Has to happen right at the moment when they're filling up. The yeah, they're second,
like, oh, solar storm. And you're like, what?
Well, no, she mentioned it in her favorite room. Like, this is where you go if there's a solar storm or whatever.
Oh, because it's so beautiful. And it is beautiful.
No, to lock down so that you don't get radiation.
Right.
Because it's so beautiful.
If, like, because they've been traveling for a while, like, if solar storms were a they common thing had they had to way. Deal with. Yeah. Then you're like, but if you're like, oh, there's one solar storm for this entire trip, and it happens at the exact moment when we filled up one tank and have started filling up the second, then it seems pretty ridiculous and obviously a sort of a coincidence that they're relying on to get the, they want to get to the number three, right? The whole goal is to get to three, and the solar storm happening exactly when it does allows them to do that.
Yeah. And then also, isn't that, that's like a, is there really enough oxygen in there for them? I guess so. I didn't really understand that part of it. I was watching a lot of that part on mute with subtitles still.
Okay.
Jeez. I thought I was a lazy viewer.
I do want to get back to the characterization for a second, because I do think that we were talking about how this is a more aspirational version of the story. And I really liked the fact that clearly... everyone, except for the Anna Kendrick character, had decided that this guy has to die, but it wasn't going to be, we're going to murder him in his sleep. And at one point, I think you're supposed to assume that's what the Daniel Day-Kim character is going to do. But instead, he does, you know, I mean, a horrifying but also really decent thing where he just tells him the truth and says, you need to do this. But he doesn't say it explicitly, but he says, you need to do this to save us. And he leaves him away for painless suicide. And
yeah, that was good. I like that.
Yeah, I thought that was really effective.
I like that as well.
I mean, dude should do it. What is he? He's got nothing. He doesn't bring anything to the table. Also, their mission was a failure. Like, they totally failed because they didn't even bring any plants to the planet.
Yeah, what a waste. And also, like, whatever his... Michael is the name of the character, right? Like, his change in attitude. I guess... No, because he didn't know at that time. So he's freaking out because he's on this spaceship. And he shouldn't be, obviously. And it's too far away to go back. And he's going to be on it for 2 years. Yeah. He's got a sister. He has no training for this. Super stressful. He, like, takes a nap. And then he comes back and he's like, I can work hard. I'm going to pull my weight. You know, and it's like, really? Like, it took a nap for you to get from total panic to excited for this adventure? Like... Yeah, you'd think you would have more mental and emotional trauma lingering. And he's just, like, chilling. He's happy to be doing data input for Daniel Day-Kim. Like,
although one element of that is we find out that he did actually want to apply for the next mission. So
right. There's
a part of him that, you know, is horrified that this has happened and he's left his sister behind and he's trapped here for 2 years. But I think there's also a part of him that's like, oh, shit. Great, this is what I wanted anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that is what I... You know, I mentioned Toni Collette being a villain. Maybe that's not a fair way to put it. I think the lack of villain is maybe what I was missing. Like, it just... Something was missing.
you know, like beyond what we've talked about so far with the fact that it was a more emotional drama that didn't feel like it really lived up to what it could have. The fact that the action, quote unquote, action sequence didn't feel like it built the kind of tension that it should have. Suspending belief, all of that shit. It also just was like missing something. And I don't know exactly what it was, but like it needed some extra dimension to it to feel captivating and engaging throughout. Like there, it just felt like at any given moment, I kind of knew what was going on, didn't care all that much, to be honest, and was like down to look away. And again, I say this because you guys, if you listen to the podcast regularly, you know I look away a lot, but not in movies with Anna Kendrick in space.
Right. Yeah.
No, I don't do that for that.
You're already into this, like before. You're pumped about it, which you're not often. I was. With our choices.
No, and like I didn't know what you guys were talking about, and one of you said Anna Kendrick in space, and I was like, done, in, 100%. And I watched the trailer, and I was like, yes, let's get it. Let's go. And I really was optimistic and positive, and maybe it's a situation with, you know, expectations being the villain, the real villain. But like, I should have enjoyed it. This had everything that I needed to enjoy it, and it didn't. I like actively didn't enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. So like I've had almost the exact same feelings about it.
I would say that I enjoyed it, but certainly not as much. I mean, and I went in with lower expectations, which might have helped, but that given the cast involved, I would have thought it would have been, you know, an A+ movie, and it's more like a B for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't regret having watched it. I won't say that, but I really wasn't like, oh wow, like it's totally forgettable to me. I probably won't remember that I have seen this movie in like a couple years, basically.
I wish it had been like, did you guys ever see Life with Ryan Reynolds and...
No, but another friend brought that up in comparison.
I think Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think I did see it, but why do I not remember it?
Killer Alien.
There, yeah, the alien.
Yeah. I saw it for sure. Yeah.
Dirt, and then the alien grows, and it's like a special kind of alien. It's like all of its cells are like three-dimensional. It's like the triple threat alien where it can like their sensory, their muscle, and they're also like brain cells all in the same cell. And so it's like the ultimate creature and predator. And that movie was terrible. And I remember going to the theaters and my friends, I begged them all to go see it, and they hated it. Every single one of them hated it and were like mad at me for like days and days. Like I didn't hear the end of it. And I bought that movie on iTunes and continue and watch it from time to time because it's still a better space movie than this movie. Like it's right. So stupid, but at least it's got like fun and action and like, I don't know, like space and cool shit happening. Like this was just nothing happening ever. Even when it was supposed to be exciting.
Yeah. What about the beautiful storm? It was beautiful.
That was like kind of dust, nice.
Cool dust.
But it made me sad a little bit. That was the only emotion I felt.
Killed Anna Kendrick there.
I know, but I like her. I don't want her to die.
She's a medical researcher. I wanted
Michael to die. Michael shouldn't have been there. I'm a rule follower. He broke the rules. That's true. Accidentally or not. He thwarted the entire mission. She did not deserve to die. Although, the moment that in her interview she said, oh, this gave my life a meaning I never could have imagined it would, right, or whatever. I like had this feeling from that point on. I was like, it's gonna be her. She's gonna be the one that
yeah, she was. And she was also really good. She was like excited about the launch, and then Daniel Day Kim was like, oh, I barf, I can't take it. And then she was like, this is so much fun. And it was like, you're dead. I'm sorry, Anna.
It's gotta be you, Anna. You're the one with the most life and vigor.
It was cool when they 3D printed that cast. That was kind of cool.
Cool. You can also imagine Anna Kendrick that the reason she wanted to do the movie was because she gets a heroic death.
Yeah, and she'll get an Oscar for it. No,
she won't. Never be under
that was the only reason that Leonard Nimoy was willing to come back for Star Trek II. He was like, "I'll come back, but you got to kill me." I assume that's why Harrison Ford came back. That was one of Harrison Ford's conditions for new Star Wars too.
Yes. Yeah.
So actors like dying.
Yeah, it's good. It's great. Like, come on. What? It's great. What else could you do?
I don't know. Act.
Live.
Those are the other two options. All right. Final thoughts on Stowaway.
Just go watch Away again and then be sad that they're just never coming back. Or another life. Get ready. Yeah,
the next season's coming out, so you better get ready. Go prep.
Well, go watch Shadow and Bone. I will probably talk about that at some point, but man, that was good stuff. Jordan, you're going to like it. You'd like it.
You think I'm going to like it, but I put on the trailer and I was like, what is this? They're like on a pirate ship and stuff? Like, I don't know what's going on with
what
that.
What do you have against pirates?
There was pirate ships in Game of Thrones too. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right when the show started to get bad.
When the pirate ships came in?
Yeah.
So wait, final thoughts on this is that, yeah, I agree with everything that Daryl said. And then also, part of me wants to say that if you're a huge fan of space movies, you should watch it because it's just another space movie and we don't get those very often. But part of me believes that, like, I'm a huge fan of space movies and I hated this. It felt like an insult to all the other space movies I've seen and just me in general, like specifically. So I don't know what to tell you to do, listeners. Just follow your heart, I guess. I don't know.
Follow your heart. I think this is a safe pass, really. Honestly, that's my feeling about it. I think that unless you're like really starving for pandemic content because you burned through everything else, like you can probably give this one a pass and you're not going to feel bad about having missed it. That said, it was fine. I don't regret the time that I spent watching it, and I think no one else will either. So very neutral on this one. Extreme neutrality.
I would say that, yeah, you can skip it. It's not essential, but if you want some Anna Kendrick in space in your life, it's solid. That said, if you have not seen Sunshine and you like movies...
I thought
you were
going to say Mortal Kombat, but yeah, Sunshine.
And you like movies about people making difficult choices in space, Sunshine is the best science fiction movie of like the last 20 years. You should absolutely watch Sunshine. And then if you want to see a pale echo of it, watch Stowaway. But let us know what you think of Stowaway. Shoot us an email, info@originalcontentpodcast.com. That's info@originalcontentpodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and tweet at us, @originalcontent. You can subscribe and leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. Original Content is taking next week off because my sister is getting married, but we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yep. And stay tuned for our secret episode about Mortal Kombat, which is coming up right now, if you just leave your player on.
Stupid.